Amen. What a blessing. Thank you, Brother Mickey, for that. I feel that that's a very good foundation for what I want to talk about this morning. One of those tares that we need to talk about maybe in a little more detail. Okay, let's stand for a prayer. Father, we thank you for the rich spiritual food this week. Just thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your great love for us. Lord, that you give grace to continue on, to walk with you, to please you. Lord, these are not things of ourselves, but rather something that you give us that we can give in return. So we just thank you. Thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your love. Just ask that you would bless this session. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, this morning we will be looking at electronic or digital technology. It's something that has invaded our globe. It is everywhere. And the changes that are happening in it are so fast and rapid that it's hard for anyone to keep up with. If you go to buy a new computer, it'll probably be outdated by the time you get through checkout. Things are changing so fast. I still remember some of my friends bought these little, I think they were called Game Boys, little computerized things, electronic games that they would play. And the one I remember said he would lay up in his bed a great portion of the night playing that silly little thing, you know, pushing the buttons, running this little possum around on the screen or whatever it was, laying there all night, playing this thing, listening to the mindless music that it played. But it was captivating. It's one of those things that it seemed they just couldn't lay it down for some reason. I personally never had much use for those kinds of games. It just, I like to do something, and that seemed so pointless. One fellow, his wife liked to chase him out of the house because he, after they'd go to bed, he'd be there playing that thing, and she was trying to sleep, and this horrid little music playing. I don't know if you've ever heard what they play, but it'll drive you crazy unless you're playing the game. So that was quite a few years ago. I don't know if they still have those kinds of games out or not. I'm not really up on those things, but the first PC that I had was, somebody gave it to me. It was an older one at the time. But back then, it had 8 gig hard drive in it. That was, and of course I never expected to fill it. That's a lot of space, right? It had 256 megabytes of RAM, and it had 2 more slots, and I filled those, and I had 512 megabytes of RAM in that computer. You know, now you look back at it and you think, well, that's nothing. Your cell phone has more than that in it today. I think it ran Windows 98. But you know, things have changed so rapidly, so super fast. I remember working for my uncle in a machine shop in Missouri. And there's this fellow came in, he ran a excavation crew. And he got us all to walk out there to his truck, and we looked, and there he had this little black box with a zipper on top, and you could open it up, and there's a phone. Had a little wire running out and an antenna that stuck on top of the roof. And he could make phone calls from his car. Now, he couldn't drive around, or his truck. He couldn't drive around because it would drop the calls. It wasn't good enough to make calls while driving, but he could usually find a spot within several miles that he could make a call home to his wife or someone else. And now, that doesn't seem like very long ago to me. It seems like just a few years. But for many today, leaving the house without their cell phone is simply unthinkable. They wouldn't do it. They'd turn around and go back and get it if they would happen to forget it. And so that's how fast things have changed. I'm getting older, but I'm not that old. Things are just continually, rapidly changing. And so this morning, we're going to be mostly looking at the effects of the internet and smartphone and the problems that they're causing. I think as a church, we should be asking some questions, shouldn't we? So I'm not sure how long cell phones have been out. For sure the smartphones maybe, has it been 10 years? Probably about 10 years. So we should be asking some questions. How is it working out? What's been happening with them? Has it been the great blessing that they promised to be in the beginning? And another question that we should be asking is it just like any other tool that we can buy? I think those are good, honest questions that we should be asking. And this morning, what I'd like to do is just simply allow others to speak to us. Okay, so I've never owned an iPhone, so you might think, well, what does he know? So I'm not going to be telling you a whole lot. I'm going to let others speak to us. People that have studied this, people that know about it, and allow the scientists and the researchers to give us some input here this morning. I think they have some things that we would do good to know or to hear and to understand. They have some things that would be good for us if we understood them. I don't know if you're aware of it, but there is a lot of data out on this, a lot of information. If you really want to check into it, there's a lot of info out there. There's actually so much information and alarm among doctors and researchers that we almost have to wonder, where have we been as churches? Have we stuck our heads in the sand? I think some of you will probably be surprised by some of what you hear today, but I think we're only going to hit the very tip of the iceberg. And I'd just like to, before I get into that part of it, I'd like to just throw something else out here that has been a rising alarm and concern of mine. It's also a digital device now, and it's the camera. Now, I think it can be used. I use a camera for various things, interesting things, things maybe at times we want something that we can keep for memory or whatever, or children. But their prolific use is of a big concern to me. And it's one of those things that seems to drive this self-awareness, the self-life. It's just simply a driving force behind it. I have to look, everything about me has to look just right. Every hair has to be in place, everything. Someone told me that they had a friend that if they would take a picture, and I can't remember, was it a he or she, whoever, had to take a look and make sure that it was okay before they would allow it to be saved on the other person's camera. That concerned about the self-image and what they look like. And so, again, I don't necessarily see anything wrong with the device in and of itself in a few pictures, but when it's about me, myself, and I, and all the, you know, it is the one of the big players in the whole social media world. It's the one that pushes that whole thing. And that's the awe factor of the whole thing, maybe, because, wow, that's all they do. All their life, they have fun because that's what's posted. You know, it might be weeks apart, but their friends viewing it think, well, all they ever do in their life is fun, and I just have a boring life. And then I have another question. Who wants to go back and look at those thousands and thousands of pictures? Who would want to waste that kind of time? And really, are all those photos appropriate for everyone that's going to be seeing them? Just questions. Let's be very careful. Cameras can be quite cost-effective. They're very cheap nowadays if you buy a cheap one. But I'm rather astounded at how much money is wasted, and I think I use that word advisedly, wasted on cameras. It just, can I put that out for us? I'm not trying to bash anyone. I'm just saying, let's think together, okay? All right, let's move on to digital technology. Some of the resources that I'm going to be using this morning. Well, let me first go over some that you might already have that you're aware of. There's a book, I think it's been back here, called Infotech. Has lots of good stuff in it for you to read. Gary Miller has a book, Surviving the Tech Tsunami. And someone was nice enough to buy an audio copy of that for me, but I haven't had time to listen to it, or I haven't taken the time to listen to it. And then there's Harry Argo. Does anyone remember what was his set called? The Effects of Technology. Okay. So I think those are available here as well. And he was in the military. I forget. Maybe in developing some kind of simulation software for the soldiers. And so he has a lot of insights into some of that. But some of what I'm going to be using today is an article that Newsweek put out. And mind you, this is Newsweek. They put out an article, and I'm not sure which year it was, but the picture on the cover, on the front cover, is of a young man, just looks like he's pulling his hair out. He's going crazy. And the title is I Crazy, and it's spelled with the little I and then crazy. So we'll be looking at some of the research on that. Another is a book by Dr. Archibald Hart, and it's called Thrilled to Death. He has another book out, and I don't have it, but it's all of it is on technology. This book is mostly talking about hitting a larger area of what he calls anhedonia, which is, if you know what a hedonist is, it's someone that pursues pleasure. That's what they live for, is one high to the next. And he has found out that those which do that end up, well, his subtitle is here, How the Endless Pursuit of Pleasure is Leaving Us Numb. And if you stimulate or press the pleasure button often enough, you end up becoming dead emotionally. There's no longer any ability to experience just the basic joys and pleasures of life. So we can walk out, up here this morning, just looking at the sun and as it's coming up, and just the beauty and the splendor of the sunrise, if you will. Some people, that does nothing for them. They can find no enjoyment or pleasure in the things, the basic things of nature that all of us find enjoyable. So anyway, we'll be looking at some of his studies. Another one is Brad Huddleston. He's a man that crashed his life. I don't know exactly what that means, what happened. I never found that out for sure. But he goes around the world speaking and giving a seminar that he calls Digital Cocaine. And also very interesting. And what brought him to this was his own life deteriorating from digital technology. As I studied this subject, more and more lights started coming on in my mind why people are so lost in the digital world. I know that all of you have seen some of it. You try to hold a conversation with someone that owns a smartphone, and you can only speak for about so long. I know this doesn't apply to everyone, but I'm just saying, most of us have seen it, most of us have experienced it, and you talk a few sentences, you exchange a few words, and the thing comes out of the pocket, and you do something, and then it goes back in. You talk a little bit longer, it comes back out, they do something, and it goes back in. And that just happens continually, over and over. People will hardly look up. You'll see them when you're driving. You'll see them with their phone up on the steering wheel doing things. Why would you risk your life and others? I mean, it's not only a hazard to their own life, but a hazard to whoever else is on the road. Because you cannot drive and operate a cell phone at the same time. It doesn't work. So people are getting away with it, obviously, but it is dangerous. So there are things that are going on a much deeper level than just simply sending or receiving a text or a tweet. There's something much deeper going on, and we're going to be looking into that. There are things going on deep in the brain that are causing the brain to be rewired. That's what the scientists and the researchers are telling us. The brain is being rewired. How do you like that? I don't want my brain rewired unless it's by Jesus. Electronic media is stimulating and is addictive in almost the identical way that of those that use and abuse cocaine drugs. So Brad Huddleston, I was telling you about him and what he does. He is in with a research group, and they do brain scans. They have different ways of doing brain scans. The functional MRI is one. They'll hook people up to this machine, and it monitors the brain and what's going on in there and live. You know, it's not like a CAT scan that only gives you slices that you can look at later, but this is a live image that they can watch the brain on. Another is a SPECT scan, and so they can watch what's happening in the brain and what the brain looks like and how it's functioning while people look at something, while they text, while they do something on their computer, while they talk about. You know, there's just all kinds of tests that they run. But they can watch this. They can see what the brain activity is and what's happening in the brain, if you will. And it's astounding what some of those brain scans look like. He does some pictures and shows you the brain of someone that is addicted to digital technology and someone that is addicted to cocaine. And the dead spots in the brain are almost identical. There's someone that hasn't had any kind of brain damage in that sense. The scan shows the cortex with everything's there. It just looks fully functional. But then you have the person that's hooked on cocaine, and there's these big pockets or holes that are just simply nothing's happening there, nothing going on in there. And for digital technology, it's exactly the same way. Big holes, craters, pockets within the cortex where nothing's happening. Something is amiss. It destroys, and here I'm giving other people's information here. It destroys the ability to learn and to keep focus. Those are two things that happen when someone is into this addiction of digital technology. Brad says that the more screen time and the stimulation that it brings, the more distant God becomes. He says it is impossible for someone to spend a bunch of time on their device, and it could be a computer, could be a smartphone, whatever, and interacting socially like that, to walk away from that and have a meaningful prayer time is impossible. It's not a tiny chance. It's not a maybe if you're a spiritual person. He says it's impossible. These things feed something in the mind that makes us feel that we don't need God. It replaces something, that something deep within the heart of man that desires to have fellowship and connection with God, that is voided through the stimulation of the digital technology. I know those might sound like some very strong statements, but we're going to look at the research. We're going to look at what researchers that are non-Christian, they don't care whether you love God or go to church or whatever. They're just saying this is what's happening. So we'll be looking at some of that. Harry Argo says electronic devices are taking the place of worship by removing the desire for fellowship. You know, you're having fellowship, and that's one of the big problems with it. Someone has their device or their social networking, and it's not just social networking, and we'll look at that later, but that is a very big problem. But there's this feedback. You put something in and something comes back. You put something in, goes out, something comes back. And there's this, quote, fellowship, but it's pseudo-fellowship. It's not real fellowship. It's something other than real fellowship. So, but it's stimulating. It does something within the brain. It releases a little shot of dopamine every time someone does that. And talking face to face does not do that. And so it's stimulating something that normal conversations cannot do. And that's why that thing has to come back out and you have to get a little hit and then it can go back in. And then you can resume your conversation until you get bored stiff, and then you have to pull it back out and do a little bit more. And then after you get that little surge of dopamine, you can stick it back in your pocket and continue until you're bored again. That's what's happening. That's what's going on the subconscious level. They don't know it, of course. We have been made by God to desire fellowship, to have fellowship one with another. Just like Brother Mickey was telling us, we need those ropes connected. We need those connections. But when we have online connections, they're pseudo connections. They're not real human connections in the same sense. There might actually be someone on the other end of the line. There might not be, depending what it is. Gaming, for example. There's no real person there. If they could pull back the colors and the screen and everything, all that would be there in reality is a little device that is feeding a stream of numbers so fast through there that you couldn't possibly watch it, of little zeros and ones. That's all that's happening. That's what's going on deep down inside the computer. So it's not like there's any kind of true fellowship going on. It's just what somebody has programmed into that thing, and people waste hours and hours and hours and hours. Okay. I don't know if I can draw good enough to put us a brain up here, but we'll try. We'll get something up here. Don't know if Ben's here. Maybe he'd want to volunteer. So somewhere inside your skull, there's something that looks a little bit like this. Oops. Something like that. And I don't know if you've ever seen any anatomical model of the brain, but it looks something like that. Your eyes are up here. This is the back of the head here. And Right up here in the front, this is what they call the prefrontal cortex. And in here, in the center, in the middle of your brain, there's a little spot there that's called locus accumbens. It's a place where they call the pleasure center. And every time you do something that makes you feel good, what's happening is there's a little shot of dopamine going into there, and it makes you feel good. So when we learn something, it's a part of how we learn and a lot of different things. If we enjoy what we're learning, we learn it so much better because it gives a little reward when we learn. You know, first grader, they come home and they're all excited because they learned what ah is. And they'll never forget ah all their life. Because it's an exciting moment. They learn something. They're in school now. They know how to count to 100. And it gives them a little shot. And it makes them feel good. And that's what's happening. But what can happen if we do something that continuously stimulates that? This fellow here in this book, he says that there's a wall that starts being built here. And so you do something, you're learning something or whatever, and there's a little shot of dopamine that goes in. And if you do that too often, there's a little wall. And I know that's just theory, but it's being blocked. So you have to do something a little more exciting so it can go up over top of that, right? And so you keep on stimulating that in an unnatural way. That wall gets higher and higher and higher until finally it gets to the point where there's this anhedonia, no longer able to experience pleasure in anything. And there's just dead. It's not exactly depression, although I'm sure depression is included, but it's different than typical depression. And so these electronic devices continually feed that kind of thing in, and that wall gets higher and higher and higher. And the people have to do it more and more and more and more in order to get that same stimulation. Okay. Let me read some here in his book. Uncovering the brain's pleasure system. Simply put, anhedonia, the reduced ability to experience pleasure, is brought on, paradoxically, by the excessive pursuit of pleasure. Mainly, it develops out of high amount of stress most of us experience today. So he's saying stress can cause this problem as well. But it is a byproduct of the fantastic technological improvements in our world. We have such a high level of stimulation that we can escape boredom in an instant. Just think about it. Are you ever lonely? Just log on to your favorite internet chat group and bye-bye to loneliness. Bored? Turn on your iPod or watch a movie on your portable DVD player. Fed up? Grab your cell phone and text the person that you are ticked off with, and get it off your chest. Of course, your stress level will go higher when 20 seconds later you get a message back venting on you. Needing to work on a project or homework? Put your iPod earpiece into one ear, your cell phone earpiece in the other, turn on your laptop to check your email, and now you can concentrate on your project or your homework. All this stimulates the brain to the point of overload. Technology is revolutionizing our lives, but ravaging our brains. Okay, so there's an experiment here that we'll talk about a little bit, and I don't think I'll read it. I'll just summarize it for us. There's these two researchers in 1954 that we're doing experiments with the implanting a little electrode into a rat's brain to see what happens. Why'd they do that? I don't know. But anyway, they found out that if they stimulate this certain area of the brain, the little creature goes into a fit of rage, just gets mad. And as long as they're stimulating that, it is in a fit of rage until they turn it off, and then it's okay again. So they found out there's certain parts of the brain, and of course this is a study that's been going on a long time, but there's different parts of the brain that do different things. And in this case, they could make this little rat angry just simply by giving it a little electrical pulse in the brain in this certain place. Well, one day the scientists misplaced it a little bit, and the rat actually seemed to be quite happy when they turned the switch on. And so they tried to figure out, you know, what's this all about? And they made a little button for the rat to push by itself to see what it would do. And what they had accidentally done was place the electrode in that locus accumbens area. And so it was stimulating the pleasure center. And what they found out is that the rat would learn to push that button, but it wouldn't stop. It would keep on pushing it. There was something about this kind of stimulation, this electronic stimulation, was different than the regular pleasures maybe of eating a tasty food. At a certain point, it's enough. But this electronic stimulation didn't work that way. The rat wanted to keep on pushing the button. So they set up some more tests, see how serious is the little rat about this. And they found out the rat would forego every pleasure in life to be able to push that button. And so they made this little electric grid that it had to run over to get to the button that would shock it. And it was willing to be shocked as it crossed that grid in order to get to that button and push it. And it doesn't say it here, but in another study that I'd done some years ago, I remember this experiment, and the rat would keep on pushing that button to the point of total exhaustion. And then it would lay down, position itself close enough to the button where it could just stick its little paw up there and continue pushing the button until it died. Now that sounds funny, doesn't it? Actually, I'm sorry for the little critter they did it to, but does it ring a bell?
Yeah,
have you seen it? Are the lights coming on? I think something should say, wait a minute. Are there things that we know of? After looking at the sunrise, I was able to walk in here. I didn't have to stay out there and look at it 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 and look at it. I could enjoy it. I was satisfied. And then I walked in here. There was fulfillment, right? But when there's not fulfillment, you have to continue. And one of the things that happens, finally, the button is pushed long enough where the thrill of life dies. It's not fulfilling. And that's what they're saying here. There's not fulfillment there. And so there's this continual urge to continue doing it. Okay, let's read, continue reading on here. The researchers went even further in their experiment and found not only is the pleasure system of the brain the super potent deliverer of euphoric joy, but when it is stimulated directly, as when electrical signals are sent through the implanted electrodes directly into the pleasure system, the animal is never fully satisfied. It is the same with humans. There is no limit to the craving for pleasure. This pleasure barrel is without a bottom. It never gets full, and the more you give it, the more it wants. That's just the way the thing works. Okay, here was one more thing I wanted to read out of this book. Overstimulation of our pleasure system as now being experienced through many high-tech gadgets, computers, games, iPods, and so on, actually creates what is called an addiction process, a process that slowly shuts down the brain's pleasure system like a regular addiction. It just shuts things down and they quit working. Things don't work anymore because the thing has been so overstimulated, it takes so much to get over top of this wall that has been built, that everyday joys that we experience are no longer able to be experienced. And it takes more and more and more and more. And like he said there, the barrel has no bottom. You can never fill it. And he goes on to give some steps to how to get out of that and how to pace your life in such a way and do things to where you can again. And this fellow is a Christian, by the way, so he also talks about the problem of not being able to fellowship with God anymore after this happens. There's an inability to connect with God through this overstimulation process. And so he talks about how to get back to being able to just sit quietly and read your Bible and to meditate on the Word of God after. So there's hope in the matter. But just like Brad Huddleston says, he goes all over and he's a Baptist, by the way. But his recommendation is throw the smartphone away. Get a basic phone. Take the devices from your children. Do not let them have them. And he said, no one will do it. He's had people after people come and say, well, okay, I heard what you said in your seminar. I see it. Absolutely. I see it in my children. I see it in my grandchildren. It's terrible. What can we do about it? He says, it's simple. Take the device away. And he said, they're just like the rich young ruler. They turn away with their heads hanging and walk away. They will not do it. And the reason is that right there. There is such an overstimulation of pleasure. It's an addiction. Tell someone to stop doing cocaine. Just quit it. You know, throw it away. It takes a lot more seriousness than that. Okay, back to our Newsweek. All right, they say just 5 hours a day online can qualify as internet addiction. One of the questions this researcher asks is, does the internet make us crazy? Okay, so there was a case in 2012 where a Chinese study was linked with internet addiction to a 10 to 20% shrinkage of gray matter in the area of the brain responsible for processing speech, memory, emotion, motor control, and other sensory information. 10 to 20% shrinkage in the brain, in the areas that control, and there's specific areas in your brain, they know it's all mapped out. If you ever look at a medical manual, you can see that it's all mapped out. They know exactly. If someone has a head injury, and so a certain part is injured, they know before the person comes back to consciousness which part isn't going to work because of where it's at. And so there's a 10 to 20% shrinkage in the gray matter in the area of the brain responsible for processing speech, memory, emotion, motor control, and other sensory information. It found that the more time spent online, the more the brain showed signs of atrophy. Atrophy is just shrinking. A parallel study found that the brains of internet addicts contained abnormal white matter in the areas responsible for attention, control, and executive function. Would you like to have your executive function center destroyed or shrinking? The thing that tells everything, every part of your body what to do. Attention, the area that controls your attention span, the control, which we already looked at that, but anyway, we'll go on. According to Dokupel, Being labeled as an internet addict is pretty easy. One must log 38 hours a week online or just over 5 hours a day on a computer at work, iPads or smartphones. By that definition, he says, we are all addicts by Wednesday afternoon or Tuesday if it's a busy week. Hopefully not here, but, you know, he's just admitting it. You know, most of the people fall into that category. Okay, even if internet users choose to reduce their web time, health experts say it could prove difficult because the internet use has become compulsion. Answering every ping gives us a mini reward of dopamine, according to the MIT media scholar Judith Donathan. So, there again, you know, it's saying people that want to back off find it very hard to do so because it's continually stimulating and they got to have another hit. Researchers are studying how that web addiction may lead to more severe mental illnesses. So they're saying that web addiction is causing mental illness. Okay? Altogether, the digital shifts in the last 5 years call to mind a horse that has sprinted out from underneath its rider, dragging the person who once held the reins. That's a pretty graphic picture, isn't it? This is Newsweek telling us. No one is arguing for some kind of Amish furniture, but the research is now making it clear the internet is not just another delivery system. It is creating a whole new mental environment, a digital state of nature where the human mind becomes a spinning instrument panel and few people will survive unscathed. That's what Newsweek wants to tell you in their article that they published back in 2012 or whenever it was. When the new DSM is released, and that's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, when it's released next year, internet addiction disorder will be included for the first time. I don't know if you've ever seen it, big, thick purple book that has all the mental disorders in it. And yes, it's about that thick, full of mental disorders that people have. It's now going to include internet addiction. China, Taiwan, and Korea recently accepted the diagnosis and began treating problematic web use as a grave national health crisis. In those countries where tens of millions of people, as much as 30% of the teens, are considered internet addicted, mostly to gaming, virtual reality, and social media, the story is sensational. Front page news. One young couple neglected its infant to death while nourishing a virtual baby online. Their own child died while they were trying to take care of this virtual reality baby that they had adopted online. Horrible. A young man fatally assaulted his mother for suggesting he log off and then used her credit card to rack up more hours. At least 10 ultra web users serviced by one-click noodle delivery, I'm not sure what that is, have died from blood clots from sitting too long. If you sit too long, your blood ends up clotting or lay too long, and these fellows were so stuck to their device. They were the little rat there pushing the button, and finally the blood clot got into their brain and killed them. Then there was the University of Maryland's 2010 Unplugged experiment that asked 200 undergrads to forego all web and mobile technologies for a day and to keep a diary of their feelings. So here's what they said. I am clearly addicted to the dependency is sickening, reported one student in the study. Media is my drug, wrote another. At least two other schools haven't been able to get such an experiment off the ground for the lack of participants. Most college students are not just unwilling, but functionally unable to be without their media links to the world, the University of Maryland concluded. I mean, college is where you try everything, right? Give me $100, I'll join your little test. Not here. It's taking their cocaine away from them. They're not going to do it. They couldn't get enough people to even try it, that were willing to do without their internet connection or their phones for just simply a week. That same year, two psychiatrists in Taiwan made headlines with the idea of the iPhone addiction disorder. They documented two cases from their own practices. One involved a high school boy who ended up in an asylum after his iPhone usage reached 24 hours a day. I guess so. The other featured a 31-year-old saleswoman who used her phone while driving. Both cases may have been laughed off had it not been for a 200-person Stanford study of iPhone habits released at the same time. It found that 1 in 10 users feels fully addicted to his or her phone. About 6% of the sample admitted some level of compulsion, while 3% won't let anyone else touch their phones. Around 24 people, half of them experienced web users, half of them newbies, and, okay, this is a fellow that's doing some studies, takes these people and puts them into a study. Half of them were newbies and half of them were web users already. He passed them each through a brain scanner. The difference was striking, with the web users displaying fundamentally altered prefrontal cortexes. Let me finish reading that and then we'll come back. The real surprise was what happened next. The novices went away for a week and were asked to spend a total of 5 hours online and then return for another scan. The naive subjects had already rewired their brains, he wrote later, musing darkly about what might happen when we spend more time online. So these brain scans showed an altered prefrontal cortex, and that's this part up here that I was talking about. And that part of your brain is the part of your brain that makes all your moral decisions. When you look at something, animals don't have that part of a brain. We do. When you come into a situation, an animal just, you know, they just go by instincts. But for us, we assess it, we look at it, and we decide, is it right or is it wrong? And we make decisions. It runs through the prefrontal cortex. And here they're saying that these web users had an altered, I'm guessing, again, the brain scans probably look like those I described earlier, where there's dead spots in the brain that just simply aren't functioning. Things aren't working. Or maybe some shrinkage. I'm not sure what all it was. But I believe that is the reason why even a Christian, when they're watching a movie, if some filthy thing comes on, they will almost never turn it off. Because it bypasses the prefrontal cortex where the thinking, where the decision making takes place. It bypasses that completely and it stimulates this feel-good area. And so you're sitting there, some bad language comes across or some obscenity of some kind, and just continue sitting there because this part of the brain isn't functional anymore. The part of the brain that says, whoa, wait a minute, I'm a Christian, I can't do that, that's not right. That part of the brain isn't working. Scholars At Case Western Reserve University, correlated heavy texting and social media use with stress, depression, and suicidal thinking. So here are some people that ran some tests and felt like it was very connected with stress, depression, and suicidal thinking. Okay, well, we're out of time. I would have liked to go maybe into more detail, but I don't think I really need to say more, do I? I'm not sure where all that leaves us, but I think it should put a very serious soberness within our mind. I'm not just quoting someone here that is opposed to iPhones for some religious reason. These are people that don't care. They've run the tests, they've done the studies, and they say this thing is dangerous. Brains shrink, certain parts of the brain stop working, and it brings this compulsive habit of having to try to get more stimulation, more stimulation, more stimulation. The one study claimed that even using things like QuickBooks and CAD, just simply that interaction can also do some of the similar damage. Even though you're not communicating with someone else, somehow the communicating with this device does something. And again, I'm not sure where that leaves us completely, but it's just some very sobering information that the world has done a lot of work in getting some of this data together for us. And I think we should sit up and listen and take a look at it. It's very sobering. And I think also it's the very reason why it is so difficult for a church to decide to go with basic phones instead of smartphones. We're not just dealing with a different kind of device to call someone or feed information back and forth. It is an addiction. It's something that people feel unable to give up. And so it's just good for us to know that. Okay, I think I'll close with that.